Hello, how are you? Glad you're with us. Thanks as always for tuning into Floor 9. I'm your host, Ryan Miller, and today we're talking about Apple's spatial computing device, Vision Pro. Joining me today for this discussion on Apple's newest product are a couple of pros with unparalleled vision. It's Adam Simon and Chelsea Freitas. Welcome back to the show, guys.
Hey, Ryan.
Hi, Ryan. I don't think I've had unparalleled vision since I was like 8 or 9 years old. So I will take it.
I'm proudly in the 4i club myself. So we're on the same page here. So I suspect our listeners are already well acquainted with what Vision Pro is, but to provide a succinct summary, Apple Vision Pro is a spatial computer that blends digital content and apps into your physical space and lets you navigate using your eyes, your hands, and of course, your voice. Those are Apple's words, not mine. Notably, the Vision Pro is the first new category device for Apple since the HomePod debuted in 2018. Adam, I'm curious to know, what have you seen from a sales perspective so far? Would you qualify this as a successful debut for the Vision Pro?
I think it's hard to know what success looks like in this category right now. So the Vision Pro, as I think most listeners probably know, is a high-end device. It is $3,500, starts at $3,500, let's be clear, and it goes up from there. And it is shipping in pretty limited quantities. We've seen that some leaks that suggest that they might have sold around 200,000 units in sort of the pre-order or initial launch window. And I think that that is, generally speaking, a good sign considering the price of the device.
Right.
And I think that the other thing that we've had our eyes on even before this device was announced was the sort of manufacturing constraints around it. The screens are so high end and such a niche product that we know that their screens are supply constrained. So I think the numbers that I saw were something like Sony, who is making the screens, can make something like 500,000 of them a year, which might limit it to about 250,000 devices because they have obviously one for each eye. Now, with that said, Apple might have also been stockpiling them since last year. So I think the projections, when you look at the analysts, and they might, you know, at some point start diversifying for suppliers to try to get that number up. If you read the tea leaves, I think we're going to see about 500,000 of these in market over the course of 2024. And is that blowing the roof off the building? Obviously not. But I think that it's more about like the direction that this product and this platform, which we'll get into in a little bit, represents, and sort of Apple's stake in the ground in a nascent category that has really struggled to break out of gaming. And I think that this is sort of our best chance yet to see some combination of AR, VR, MR, XR, all of these acronyms get swept into a new term, Apple's marketing term is spatial computing. And this might be the first time that we sort of see headset devices start to break out of the gaming niche that they have been relegated to.
Yeah, definitely think there's a lot more opportunity with the Vision Pro than there does currently exist with the Microsoft HoloLens from an AR perspective, or a Meta Quest 3 from a VR perspective. This is definitely the superior headset of the moment. We'll see if it actually manages to stake its claim in the ascendancy over the next couple of months or so. So Adam, as a proud owner of a Vision Pro yourself, can you give me just your initial impressions? I think you've had it for around a month at this point. What do you see from it? Are there great apps? Are you using it every day?
So I'm not using it every day. I am using it often. What I would say is, I think the two things that strike me are, one, this is a real computing platform, unlike Meta's Quest operating system, which definitely skews more towards an appliance game console like interface infrastructure. From all the developers that I know and have spoken to about it, it's got all of Apple's developer tools. It's just as much of a real computer as an iPhone or an iPad or a Mac. And I think that that is what's exciting about it. I think there are not enough apps on it right now, frankly, for the vast majority of consumers. It is very much an early adopter device. But I think that it is also a kind of like, I've heard several folks from my generation saying, it's like when you had a computer before the internet, you had to like come up with things to do with it. Obviously you would buy games and apps and stuff, but it was just like this, you wanted to spend time with this device and with this platform, and you came up with stuff to do. And obviously the internet like blew the doors off of that. There was suddenly lots of stuff to do, but I feel obviously the Vision Pro has internet access, but I feel like it's in a similar mindset where I want to do things in it that are maybe not it's maybe not the best option for, the most efficient option for, but it is the sort of most fun and future forward, future thinking option for doing some things. It's interesting to have that feeling because I haven't really had that since the initial iPhone.
I love that analogy that you made about a computer pre-internet, though I th will say that some of our audience is probably thinking $3,500 is a steep price to pay for an imagination machine. So we'll see if there are some more killer use cases that are launched in the next few months or so. And Chelsea, I know that you, like I, have only had the opportunity to try this technology out in a limited capacity. Can I just bug you for your initial impressions?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think this device truly sits in a category of its own. And I mean, just from like a user perspective, going into the store, you'll actually be properly fitted. So I know for us, actually trying on the physical device itself, we even hit a couple issues, you know, like our team's different sizes of face and different like headbands needed. So Adam, of course, did a great job of fitting us to the best of his ability. But there truly is, you know, a new learning curve for this device beyond just the actual interface, but physically getting, you know, prepared and onboarded for it. And I think it raises a key insight or like a really interesting point here that like, everything is to some degree recognizable, right? You're in an Apple environment and an Apple ecosystem. So there is that level of familiarity, but then truly discovering brand new ways or brand new, you know, something looks different, it feels different, it's giving you different haptic sensations. So it really is just like a brand new frontier in a way, with especially that simulated pass-through as well. It took a little bit of a learning curve to be like, oh, I'm seeing people, but I'm also in my completely solo environment here behind the screen. It was a really exciting thing to test and play, and I think we're only going to see so much more development in different sectors within.
Yeah, you talk about haptics and new control mechanisms. I gotta say, I felt like I had a few boomer moments where I was just like reaching out and trying to touch all the different applications I saw on the screen instead of like using my hands and eyes intuitively to navigate to the next experience. So there is a slight learning curve to it, but I think if you know, Chelsea, like you said, are familiar with Apple products, you'll pick up the hang of it pretty quickly. Cool. So, you know, Chelsea and Adam, I'm curious. We kind of all use it for different use cases when we had our trial period. I know I loved going behind the booth and mixing two different songs from Adam's iTunes library in the DJ application. I know, Chelsea, you sampled an Alicia Keys concert, but what do you guys think Apple wants to do with this device? Is it just consumer entertainment? Is it more for enterprise? What do you think?
Well, I think there's like two stages to this question. One is like what it is good for and can be used for now, and the other is the future. I think for right now, I think that on the consumer side, Apple is really positioning it as entertainment. It is a great replacement for an iPad or a television for watching video content. Even 2D video content, you can simulate a much larger display than the screen you have, the TV you have in your living room. And obviously, if you don't have access to that TV or you want to watch video content on a big screen in a room that you don't have a television in, it's a great substitute for that. It's also really good, the sort of ability to bring your Mac screen, use it basically as an external monitor for your Mac. Some critics have been saying it's not quite as sharp. It's true. It's not as sharp as like the best Apple display or either of the Apple displays that they sell. But if you're like traveling and you're in a hotel room, you can get a giant display. Or again, in a room in your house where your monitor, it does not live. Like not everybody obviously has dedicated office spaces for everybody in their household. So like, I think that flexibility, the ability to pop up a large, yes, it could be higher resolution, but good enough display anywhere you need it, I think is awesome. And it's excellent at that. I think that on a productivity perspective, they're also sort of positioning for that in the near term. And we're having in our IT department, we are not able to actually log in to things like Teams and PowerPoint because of some IT restrictions that I hope Apple is like really pressuring Microsoft on that front, because it's really a Microsoft tool that is missing from the platform that would allow us to authenticate against those things. So I haven't been able to use it as like a full workday situation because we do spend so much time logged into Teams. But I think that there is potential there, and I can definitely see, and I have seen other people say that they can be incredibly productive in the device. So those are sort of the near-term things. Longer term, I think it's a different story, but I don't know. Chelsea, why don't you weigh in with your thoughts on the short to medium term?
Yeah, totally. I like your note of like creating that space or that screen. I think that's what this is all about, right? Display, display, display. So I think entertainment is obviously the first and foremost like use case. That's where the primary bulk of content is being developed as well. Like you said, I hung out with Alicia Keys on an Apple TV streaming video. We're seeing Disney do a ton in that space as well as they're upgrading some of their catalog to be Vision Pro ready, to be like feeling like a piece of fully immersive content. Just given the real estate of the space, design and aesthetic use cases are obviously going to be top of the chart, top of the list. I saw a headline earlier today that they're starting to test Vision Pros to like teach in surgery environments to like eliminate more human error. So I think we'll see it in, you know, that type of meticulous learning and educational environments as well. And then I'd love to see, you know, more design and aesthetic investments. I feel like people are still figuring out like what is possible and then how to actually maximize the real estate of this, you know, I'm air quoting screen, but this like immersive visual in front of us.
No, I love the unlimited canvas aspect of the Vision Pro. I think right now the only comparable solution is like a short throw projector, but you would need like four of them in order to replicate what the Apple Vision Pro is capable of doing in a three-dimensional space. So I think we'll see kind of over the course of time that become one of the primary selling points of the Vision Pro. And, you know, as we're talking about some of those primary selling points and core capabilities of the device, would you guys say that this might be the future of personal computing?
I think eventually it will be. I think that in the near term, what we're seeing is a lot of people moving. It can run iPad apps natively, right? So that's great for anything that already is on iPad and is in it. It is, they just have to check a box and you can run it in your Vision Pro and they work great. This is a great short-term solution. And then also the ability to bring your Mac screen into it. Great short-term solutions for letting people be productive on the device. I think we're just starting to see the beginnings of like rethinking some of these experiences for 3D immersive computing environments. I just saw earlier today a designer using Blender, which is one of the leading 3D rendering programs, using it with the Mac sort of pass-through display in his Vision Pro, but then next to the sort of Mac interface for it, having the Vision Pro natively render what he was doing in 3D floating in space. So he could sort of have a live preview of the 3D content. And that is awesome, right? Like, if you work in 3D, if you, and we talk about this a lot behind the scenes, I don't know how often we have talked about it on the podcast. So much productivity is moving into the 3D space and we think is going to be moving into the 3D space, whether that is, you know, doing more immersive video calls in things like Meta's Horizon Workrooms or actually, you know, collaborating on creating 3D assets and things like that. A lot of work is like on the precipice of becoming more 3D enabled. And I think Vision Pro is going to be one of the big platforms to really push things forward in that regard.
And Chelsea, do you think it's really mostly creative applications or do you envision people using Excel in Apple Vision Pro in the future?
I think it's going to be all different forms of immersive capabilities. And I think this is where like that untapped, you know, corner of it is who is going to be first in executing and fully utilizing the spatial capabilities, right? Like, I feel like there's so much to tap into there. We're seeing the canvas be used in really creative and exciting ways, but I think it's first the collaboration element, getting that piece down. And second, it's also the spatial capabilities to truly like recognize the space that and the environment that someone is physically in and being able to develop and capture against that environment.
Yeah, I can see this definitely being more useful for not only surgeons, as you had referenced earlier about being used for training, but like with architects as well. Potentially, there's an opportunity where they're designing mini models and then have like real-time overlays of the prospective city that they're going to be doing or helping to build, you know, that digital twin concept that's becoming ever more popular today. So I think that the use cases are definitely more in the creative sphere at the moment, but we're going to start to see over time some additional development.
I mean, I love your example of architecture. architecture, right? Imagine being able to render that model, but then lifting it and rotating it to see where the sun would hit at different times of day. Like, I think that's what I mean by the spatial element of the environment, being able to actually understand. And I mean, maybe the sun is like a very broad scale there, but being able to at least understand, you know, what direction the window is facing and being able to interact with things that are existing in my environment and those external elements.
I think it's easy to say, well, of course you could sort of like talk through that or show some renderings or something, some flat 2D renderings. I think that there is something fundamentally different about putting the headset on, simulating being in the room and showing the way that the sun is going to move over the course of the day. There is a fundamental step change and difference, maybe not in the intellectual side of it, but in the emotional side of it. And I think that there is clearly some need and some desire for this kind of technology. I think the question is, Ryan, back to your original question here, is like, is it the future of all computing, or is it just another device that we will use sometimes, right? Apple said a decade ago, they were promoting the iPad as the future of computing. And that is true for some people some of the time, but we all still have Mac laptops, you know, and Windows laptops. It's not replaced those things. It's additive in a way. And I think the question is, in technology, things rarely get replaced. A lot of these things are additive, but is it going to, you know, replace your Mac usage for 50% of the time or 10% of the time is sort of like the iPad comparison. I think that has to do with two things. I think that one has to do with the hardware. It needs to get lighter and cheaper. And Apple knows that, obviously. There's a reason this is called Vision Pro, either a Vision or a Vision Air at some point. Yeah. There will be something cheaper and lighter in the future. I think the other side of it, though, is the software side and the ecosystem. This is one of Apple's many iOS derivative operating systems. And that is great. It gives them a lot of advantages. It's very easy for developers to turn their iPad apps into native Vision Pro apps. But it also comes with all the caveats around the App Store. And we know we won't get into that today. There's a lot of like contention around the App Store. My main question is, will Apple allow this platform, which is certainly powerful enough to one day replace the Mac as a primary computing device for people and a primary work device? It's certainly capable enough to do that. Mm-hmm. Will Apple allow it to? Will they allow the business models to exist on the App Store for the Vision Pro? Will they allow the power to be unlocked? It could run, it has an M2 in it. It could run native Mac apps outside of this, like, you know, just using it as a virtual display for your Mac, but it doesn't. And I think that in the classic Apple way of cannibalizing themselves, if they really wanted to do it, which is, they have a history of doing that, but if they really wanted to do that, they would at some point in the future unlock the ability to natively run Mac apps on it and to use it as a standalone device without needing, obviously, you know, you're going to have other Apple devices in the ecosystem, but without requiring any of those. And it is a standalone device, but it's a standalone device that's standalone in the same way as an iPad right now. And I think the question is, will it ever be standalone in the way that a Mac is? But at some point, to move on into the future, they have to allow some platform to become that thing that can do all of the heavy lifting that we, you know, so that our phones and our iPads and our watches can remain a little bit more lightweight.
I think a personal pain point for me that would, you know, stop me from declaring this as the future of personal computing at the moment is just the keyboard experience. Like, I don't know if I'm ready to use gesture controls and voice as the primary way that I interact with experiences.
I think that's a red herring. I think the reality is, if you type a lot, you're going to use a physical keyboard. And that's the same thing with an iPad, right? They resisted that for a long time, and then they just gave in, and they're like, look, if you need to output 1,000 words today, you probably should just use a physical keyboard. I think for the Vision Pro, it makes a lot more sense. At least for now, it is a stationary device. It is not like your phone where you're using it out and about in the world. I think that will come, but that's not what it is today.
Fair enough. As we kind of round out this section, I'm curious, do you think that this, I know we talked about it being the future of personal computing, does it signal a shift or a paradigm shift rather in computing at large?
I think it's another touch point in the suite. We're talking about the future and potential lightweight models. I think it's going to take a lot for people to trust that simulated pass through and to fully be able to like be mobile in external environments. I think for now, this is like a nice to have premium pop-in like entry point. I don't think it's going to hold its own for a few years.
Can you imagine the terror of trying to walk through the streets with simulated pass-through while cars are driving themselves? That is just people a disaster waiting to happen. How?
YouTubers are doing it, and it's totally a gimmick. Like, don't any video, it's a gimmick for clicks. Like, I get it. The reality is it's a destination device like a Mac or an iPad. It is best used seated. You don't have to be on a desk. You can be on your couch, but it's like a device that you use when you're sitting down and you're going to either watch something or do something or play a game.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing to me is the operating system is very clearly crafted to one day scale to glasses where you're not looking at a simulated pass-through. You're looking at the real world. It's overlaying the digital content on top of it. We know that that's what Apple and every other tech company wants. We need some technical breakthroughs in screen technologies before that is possible. But what Apple is doing right now is setting up the ecosystem so that when that technological breakthrough happens, there is a platform, there's an operating system, there are going to be millions of apps by that point. The content will not be a problem. I think that that is a pretty smart way to do this because, for example, if Meta had that breakthrough tomorrow and could ship the new version of their Ray-Bans, but right. that I was actually able to show, you know, AR or spatial computing or mixed reality, whatever you want to call it, content over the real life pass through to the real world, they wouldn't have apps for it. They would have games that assume you're entirely enclosed inside of the headset. Apple is pointed in a direction and they are focused on building that software ecosystem ahead of the hardware being able to do it. The Vision OS platform has the potential to replace every screen in our lives. That is what it is set up to do. In the short term, it's going to start chipping away at the Mac and the iPad and the Apple TV. It's going to take a long time before it starts chipping away at the iPhone. And I think everybody is on the same page as that. Like, Apple's not expecting you to stop using your iPhone to use a Vision OS device. I would say it's at least 10 years away before that is a possibility.
Mm. So I think we've kind of covered everything from a productivity angle when it comes to the Vision Pro, but we kind of glanced over some of those entertainment experiences that I want to kind of jump back to. So Chelsea, why don't you tell me a little bit more about the fun side of things? I know that you already referenced Disney and some of the things they're doing, but are there any other kind of key content partnerships or apps that we should be aware of? Think about like the beer drinking app when iPhone first launched. Like, what are those kinds of experiences we should be looking forward to?
Yeah, I mean, I love this question. As we said at the top, like entertainment is a key push right now for Vision Pro. That's the most natural use case. Mm-hmm. The other thing I think that's worth highlighting is the environments. The environments can scale to be, you know, the full canvas of what you're experiencing to be a little bit smaller. This situates as like a background for all of the different apps that you're using. I personally
you can go back to Montana at any time.
Literally, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was thrilled to see Glacier National Park in the background when I popped on the Vision Pro. I think whether it's, you know, these epic photograph style immersive environments, or is there a future for more branded ones or custom ones? I think that's a really cool and like element or opportunity for personalization in the future there, because this could potentially live in the background of every, you know, Vision Pro experience when it comes to those specific productivity apps. In terms of games, there's a couple headlines that Apple Arcade updates will be coming. Those apps will be updated for Vision Pro coming in April. But I think it's a little bit of a wait and see, you know, what's going to be the beer drinking app or the Pokemon Go of the Vision Pro.
I think one thing that I'm personally excited for with my footy fan cap on, or soccer for us Americans, is what they're doing with MLS. Obviously, Apple struck that huge deal when Leo Messi came to town about a year ago, and now they have the distribution rights. So I'm interested to see what they do with all this kind of immersive capture around the MLS and see what the sports broadcast experience ultimately evolves into over the next few years. I think soccer is the perfect testing ground for it, but I can definitely see a world in which this rolls out to the NFL, to the MLS. Be, even though I know they've been initially resistant, the NFL especially, during this first wave of Vision Pro deployment.
Yeah, I mean, I think the immersive video that Apple is pushing is really impressive. It's hard to describe without seeing it, but it is more 3D than whatever you're thinking and whatever you're imagining, to the point that the Alicia Keys experience is a little like, Alicia, why are you so close to me and singing directly at me personally? Becomes a little disturbing. I think that there's a lot of potential there. They've already announced that they're bringing some of the highlights from the playoffs of last season's MLS playoffs to Vision Pro sometime soon. So really interested to see what that looks like. The interesting thing is, my understanding is that live streaming, everybody was excited about live streaming sports, but it seems like that there might be some technical challenges around that. Just the size of the immersive video files might be too much for a lot of folks' bandwidth at home, which is an interesting challenge. It's been a while since we've been bandwidth constrained on a lot of experiences, and it seems like we might be back there.
You need at least a gig up down these days.
At least. Please tell Optimum that they need to upgrade their infrastructure. I think that the gaming experience right now is pretty nascent. There are some games from Apple Arcade already. There's a couple that are doing some really interesting things to take advantage of the platform, a lot that are not. There's a game called Black Box that is really taking advantage of the augmented reality and just understanding of your physical space that the device has. One of my favorite things is it just pops up sort of a seemingly system level warning dialogue that you're about to be immersed. And this is just Apple reminding you that don't like get up and trip over something because you're still in your physical space.
It'll still happen.
It pops up whenever you go into a totally immersive experience, it pops up a little dialogue. But in Black Box, when you tap the dialogue to dismiss it, it falls out of the air and lands on a flat surface in front of you. Whether that, for me, that was my couch, but it also would land on the floor if there was not something in front of it. And I also had an interesting experience in Super Fruit Ninja, which just demonstrates the limits of Apple's hand tracking. The hand tracking cannot keep up with how quickly I want to slice into fruit with my hands. But there is a random little character who pops up while you're slicing fruit, who's a little pig. And while I was playing the game, the pig was just like wandering around my apartment, does not run into any walls, at some point jumped up on my couch and was like napping when I finished a level. And I look over and the pig is just napping on my couch. He saw me looking at him, jumped off the couch and walked over to me. And it's just like, okay, like you're doing a lot there. It's interesting that that's not at all core to the game mechanic in any way in both of those examples, but it shows you that this platform can enable interesting novel use cases that you're not going to get in other platforms. And I think that to me, that is sort of signaling here's where to watch for innovation on the platform is like the attention awareness, the surface awareness. These are just things that are, you know, technically possible in things like Meta's platform, but I've never seen an app use them in the same way that I'm seeing on Vision Pro.
Yeah, that's incredibly impressive. I can't wait to see a pint-sized potbelly walking around my apartment one day through Vision Pro. Seems quite novel. But as we kind of round out the conversation on entertainment experiences, I think that there's a couple of people who are notably absent from Vision Pro's launch. So as Apple intends to build a more robust ecosystem of apps and content, can you talk a little bit about the challenges of some of these holdouts like Netflix and YouTube?
Clearly, as we've been saying, one of the best use cases, it's a great movie and TV watching device. Mm-hmm. It natively displays 3D movies in a way that is better than, honestly, I would say, even seeing them in theaters, sort of giving new life to that category that had kind of died off. As Chelsea was saying, Disney was there on day one, which is great and was sort of teased in the preview of the device. Netflix and YouTube, no native apps, which... You know, they're making the argument that it's a niche device with a small user base for now, which is true. But the interesting thing is they've been kind of Sherlocked by third-party developers. Mm-hmm. There's a third-party YouTube app, which is reskinning the website to make it easier to use inside of Vision Pro. Similarly, there's someone working on a third-party native Netflix app as well. And it just seems like a little bit of a missed opportunity to sort of own your own positioning on these platforms. Mm-hmm. I think that Netflix and YouTube being sort of competitors to Apple in some way, thought that they were, I mean, Google more than YouTube maybe, but I think they were strategically holding back something that might impact the platform. And I think really it's just impacting users' use of their services more than anything else, because there's plenty of other video services, platforms like Peacock, which does not have a native app for the platform. Their iPad app runs just fine and supports offline downloads and 4K video and surround sound. Netflix is not even doing the bare minimum, which is a little disappointing.
Right.
But I think that just encourages you to watch other platforms instead. Like, there's no dearth of things to watch, as we all know.
Yeah, I mean, short of YouTube and Netflix coming to the platform, it seems like everyone else is at least taking baby steps towards that total level of immersion. And that is something that I kind of want to key in on here, is that level of personal immersion. Chelsea, when we had the opportunity to trial the Vision Pro, we were flanked by our colleagues in a conference room. While we were there, did you still feel like you were with other people, or did you feel entirely isolated by the experience?
That's such a good question. I feel like we kind of had a rare test case, you know, given it was like in a small conference room with the people that we talk to about technology every single day. So I think to some degree, it was exciting to share that experience. I felt like I was still with people. However, as I scaled up and down the canvas size, that's one way to feel like you're fully embraced and fully immersed in that screen. I feel like it's still easy to hear. You know, I didn't really play around with the volume given I was in a room with other people, but I think turning that volume up is another great way to feel like you're fully immersed. And I think that's where in the future we will see a lot more development to really be a companion to the visual experience of the content. I think it's both. You know, you do have a little bit of control as a user to scale up or scale down that canvas, but it is kind of trippy, you know, seeing your colleague sitting on top of the mountain, but also just on the other side of the table. So I'm curious if we'll get some interesting human stories and elements given that capability. But I think, you know, as we've said, for the most part, this is a piece of technology or piece of hardware that's typically used, you know, solo in the comfort of your home.
I love two of the features that you called out, though, because if you really do want to kind of block out that outside world, you totally could. The binaural audio, just as strong as like most AirPods today, if not, you know, directly equivalent. And those environments that you could turn up and down can literally obscure your view of everything else in the room besides those screens that you or applications you choose to put forward. And obviously, from the other side of the experience, there's something called EyeSight, which Apple debuted with the Vision Pro. We know that they have three different versions. Adam showed us the cool one with his own persona, so we were able to see his quote-unquote eyes through the screen itself. But if you're not so lucky as to have that, you know, native mode in which you're the primary user of the device, they have two other ones which shows animations for your eyes to show when you're in a less immersive experience, and then a fully kind of glowed out screen to show that you're in another environment entirely, which I think obviously goes a long way in showing or declaring to the world whether you're open for conversation or not. So EyeSight, definitely an interesting feature to help bridge the gap between the immersive world you're living in and the physical one that you're actually standing in. Adam, I'm curious though, despite EyeSight being a great feature to kind of determine or help people on the external determine whether or not you are fully plugged in or not, do you think the device is socially isolating?
I mean, yes, I think it is. I think that is the reality. I think that EyeSight is a crutch. I think it is not the wrong idea. Again, this platform is being built with the idea that one day in the future, they will just be glasses. So when you're not fully immersed, you'll just see my real eyes. And I think that that is what they're building towards and what they want to sort of communicate. I think more for the user who is inside the headset, the ability to turn up and down the immersion is really useful. And it's just really well executed. It's very easy. You can do it in any environment. That ability to be able to quickly like look at what is going on around you is important for like comfort and safety. I tell a story all the time of like an early VR experience that I had years ago. I was playing some horror themed game, sitting on my couch. And in a particularly tense moment, my cat jumped on my lap and scared the bejesus out of me because I was so immersed. And I think that the ability to like dial that up and down and be a little bit more aware of your environment actually is really good and important. And the fact that most apps are not assuming, as they do on the Quest platform, are not assuming complete immersion is, I think, a good starting place, an improvement, a contribution that Apple has made to the industry. That is about people in your physical space. The other side of it is being able to collaborate with people, watch movies with people, socialize with people. A lot of those things are not built into a lot of the apps that are here today. Apple has this share play framework that lets you sort of collaborate and share media experiences with other people that is not necessarily supported by all of the video apps. It's still a little touch and go. But I think that that is the place where we will see a lot of improvement over the next year. I think that, that's something I have my eye on, because that is something that Meta, obviously being a social media first platform has done really well and where Apple needs to do a little catching up. I've been very complimentary of Apple's platform versus Meta's. This is one area where Meta is definitely ahead.
Adam, you were just hugely complimentary of Meta. I'm sure Mark Zuckerberg will thank you. But do you think that this is a true rival to the Quest 3? Is it something totally different? Or is this going to just kind of usurp all of the other competitors on the market and become the dominant AR, VR, MR, spatial computing device of the future?
I think we have to see how the market develops. I think there's space for both Apple and Meta in this ecosystem. Aww. I think that, you know, Apple is obviously starting at the high end. Meta is starting at the lower end, mm-hmm. trying to make it more accessible. I do think that the history of technology shows us it's going to be challenging for Meta to go up market. Mm. It's going to be harder for them to go up market than it is for Apple to go down market. That's just the way that technology works. Meta going up market is going to be harder just because it will make software development harder, because the high-end devices will have a very small user base at first, and mm-hmm. developers won't want to develop for that spec. They'll want to develop for the cheap Quest 2 that's been on the market for years.
Right.
So I think there's some challenges for Meta in that space. He also keeps talking about how open they are when they're not really open. He wants to be Android to the iPhone, but it's not an open source project. He's not letting other people make hardware for their operating system. And they are taking even a larger cut of fees from developers who are launching on their platform. It is much closer to an Xbox or a PlayStation than it is Android compared to the iPhone. I think the larger question is, what is the total addressable market for headsets? If anybody is going to break it out of the gaming console level niche, I think it will be Apple, because mm-hmm. Apple makes computers, not dedicated consumer electronics devices that are specialized in that way. And again, this is a computer in so many more ways than the Meta Quest platform. If we do get to AirPods for your eyes, glasses in 10 years, I think that product, if it is, again, not insanely expensive, I think it will be very successful, because mm-hmm. I think that people want a product like that. AirPods have proven that we want these access to audio while we're out and about in as easy a way as possible. I think that glasses would do the same thing. If we don't get there in 10 years and we're still in this headset niche, again, I think it looks more like a Mac or an iPad size, which is sort of equivalent to a game console size yeah. audience. I think that's the question, is like, to what we were talking about earlier, it wouldn't revolutionize things in the way the iPhone did.
Right.
And I think that's sort of the open question here.
So Adam, I don't mean to interject here, but I am curious, outside of Meta, are there any other legitimate challengers to this headset claim?
I do think that inevitably there is going to be at least one other player in this market. It's probably going to be Meta. It's going to be a challenge for them to move from being very much like a game console to being mm-hmm. a more general purpose computer, but they're also spending so much money on it that I think at some point they will figure it out. And the other major potential competitors in this space just don't seem that interested in it. I'm not sure anybody else will be able to spin up a serious competitor.
Right.
We could also end up with an Apple Watch situation where the Apple Watch is phenomenally successful for Apple. Nobody else has really been able to create a wrist wearable watch business that even comes close. And obviously that's what Apple would like to happen. The larger question here is, if it starts replacing other screens in our lives, that's going to set alarm bells off in yep. lots of other companies. Will they get started early enough to really make an impact if it does 10 years from now become a serious future of computing platform?
Yeah, Adam, I think you make a lot of great points. I think, you know, Meta faces a hugely uphill battle. Going toe-to-toe with a $1 trillion company isn't easy. And I think in the public sentiment or the realm of public opinion, Meta also has a little less trust than Apple necessarily does. So in terms of, you know, people adapting to these new devices, Apple definitely has a distinct advantage in that regard. Before I ask about marketing implications, Chelsea, I know we've kind of teased the Apple Vision non-pro or Air or whatever the heck they're going to call it in the future. Is there a price point that you'd be willing to enter the market at?
I'm listening here. I'm hearing there's a cheaper and lighter version coming soon, uh-huh. coming in the next few years. I mean, I think we'll see the price, like, maybe cut in half is like an aggressive thing to say. I feel like I would enter this space for $1,500 to $2,000.
That's
you know,
where
show
I
me more use cases too. Yeah, I'm willing to like wait and see a little bit, but you know, we're early adopters you're talking to here on this call. Yeah. So I'm excited to see what the next iteration is.
Yeah, and I think that my price point might be driven up by FOMO too. I know when everyone was getting Quest during the pandemic period, I was like, oh, well, it doesn't matter. I'm just getting one of those bad boys because everyone else has one. It can't be left out of the experience.
Our status will now be Vision Pro status. So
yeah, probably the only team in America. And we still can't do it on Teams because they haven't figured that out. Microsoft, get it together. I just alluded to marketers, and I'm now removing my futurist headset and putting on my marketing one. What is the audience right now for this kind of device? I know that, Adam, at the very top of the conversation, you cited about an estimate of 200,000 units shipped. How much more do we think that's going to grow this year? And like, who are the people using it today?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll probably hit 500,000 by the end of the year, possibly higher, but it's still going to be pretty niche. I will have questions. And one thing I would love to circle back to later is, you know, we know a lot of Meta Quest headsets out in the wild really fall off in usage over time. I think there's an open question as to what percentage of Vision Pros are still in active usage versus put in a drawer somewhere. Mm-hmm. There is definitely some pressure to keep using it because of the higher price point, which is an interesting side effect. So I'll be curious to see what the sort of active user base looks like, what compared to the active user base of Meta's platforms. Mm. All of that said, it, even if everybody is still using it on a daily basis, it's still going to be tiny, right?
Right.
So I think that the motivation here for brands and marketers, really, it cannot be about scale. It has to be about brand halo and brand perception around innovation and being a first mover on the platform. There's definitely opportunities to be a trailblazer in terms of how you want consumers to think about your category on a new platform like this. And I think that we've seen a lot of brands experimenting, a lot of them kind of shoveling content from other platforms, which is maybe not the right thing to do here. Like, I don't think that just being first gets you too much attention and credit, but being first and doing something interesting certainly is a way to sort of generate a lot of earned media,
right,
as well as positive consumer sentiment around innovation and technology.
Yeah, I think premium audience is super key here, and just acknowledging that, right? And to the point, like, you still be your brand in this environment. So lean in strategically to what you can actually offer in an immersive space. Like, I want to give a shout out here. I think we all tested and loved the Lowe's app.
Yes.
Someone who's wearing this headset is likely in the market for a full kitchen redo. That feels, you know, pretty strategically sound for who you're trying to reach. And there was a really great like personalization feature where you can swipe through different aesthetics and see different kitchen models. Something like that feels like a really, you know, spot on service and utility, still kind of entertaining, that really fits the bill. I think another shout out could go to Aloe Yoga. This also feels like a little bit more of a premium audience. In addition to their shopping experience, they also had, you know, opportunities for meditation. So I think, you know, we're seeing some brands try, but then there's other brands who their everyday consumer is more of a mass audience. And I think it's not necessarily the best strategy to just be there and just gain the PR headline. It's going to be much better if you either lean into your purpose as a brand, your audience as a brand, or the key feature here, which is going to be entertainment.
And what I think I'm hearing from both of you is that it's not as simple as just porting existing applications to the Vision Pro. It's about taking a more considered approach to designing a brand experience for this more immersive environment.
Exactly. I mean, we live in a world where it's what, one screen, two screen, three screen. There's already such a competition for your time. And this isn't a companion app. You know what I mean? This is something that you want someone's full immersed attention on. Mm-hmm. So taking that into consideration is super key.
Yeah. I think the only case where it makes sense to sort of just port something over is if you are hosting video content. If, you know, there are brands out there who have really invested in video in the past. I'm thinking of like Red Bull, for example. Like that would be a great use case of like literally just let people use the iPad app inside of Vision Pro just to get that video content. That's going to be totally fine for now. And then you can sort of look at your usage and decide when it's time to invest in a more native experience to build out some of those environments like we see from Disney. But for everybody else, yeah, it's more about what can you offer the consumer that is going to make sense in this kind of immersive environment? And for brands where that maybe doesn't totally make sense, I think that investing in video content and investing in this immersive video angle might be the correct way in. in the short term.
Chelsea, what you just said about one screen, two screen, it gave me an idea of a Dr. Seuss book for Tim Cook. One screen, two screen, blue screen, you screen. That's going to be the Vision Pro story for kids. Okay, lastly though, as brands disembark on their maiden voyage and set sail on the sea of spatial computing, what kind of headwinds can they expect? Is it going to be really expensive to produce content? Is it too limited an audience? Is it technical prowess required too great? What do you think is the greatest challenge for brands looking to make that jump today?
Even if you take the most conservative approach for activating on these platforms, which I would say is developing immersive video content, those cameras right now, Apple is using proprietary cameras. We've spoken with our friends at Sphere who have proprietary cameras. Like, these devices to just create the content right now are very proprietary and I'm assuming incredibly expensive. So that is something that I think, again, Apple and their relationships with Hollywood, I think they're going to start, we're going to start to see the productization and creation of a better pipeline for creating immersive video content. Also, folks like Sphere and Cosm, they have the same needs. And I do think that almost inevitably, regardless as to how successful this platform is, you're going to see more immersive video content. The thing I've been saying is the next time Taylor Swift goes on tour, you will probably be able to watch it in an immersive format at home. And I think that there will be an audience for that, and that will drive some headset sales for whoever nabs that exclusive. but in the meantime, I think that is going to be a headwind, as well as, you know, the sort of smaller audience at this stage.
Yeah. And I think one way to like get ahead of some of these headwinds, we talk about this a lot at the lab, is like, if Vision Pro isn't the right place for your brand just yet, it's important to invest in other 3D environments, right? What is your augmented reality strategy? How are you preparing your brand for a 3D world and beginning to build that on-ramp with consumers?
Adam, Chelsea, before we wrap up this episode of Floor 9, any final thoughts on Vision Pro?
I mean, the final key takeaway here, the people want more pig pets, more virtual pets.
Yeah, I just want that little pig to come. I don't care about the Fruit Ninja game. I just want him to like hang out in the room while I'm working on my giant Excel spreadsheet. So
a Clippy for the modern generation. I think the lab just found a new mascot. Well, as ever, thank you, Adam and Chelsea, for being here today. And thank you all for listening to Floor 9's Vision Pro episode. If you want more of that lab goodness, you can find us on Twitter at IPG Lab and on Medium at IPG Media Lab. Until next time, bye-bye.